This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Coming up later in the show, we'll talk about a possible change in the way public employees get health care in Wisconsin. But first, we're talking to an English professor who made her academic mark studying freaks and freak shows. She studied how people with physical differences were treated and how the world viewed them. When she gave birth to her son Henry, this area of research really came home to her, became extremely personal. Henry was born with Down syndrome. She's written a new memoir about the intersection of her career and her personal life. We want to hear from you. Are you the parent of a child with disabilities, a child who's different in some way that other people might take notice of? What is the reaction you get from people? Does it frustrate you, or do you see a lot of teaching moments out there? What needs to change? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can send an email, talk@wpr.org. Rachel Adams joins us now. She's a writer. She's a professor of English and American Studies at Columbia University. Her new book is Raising Henry, a memoir of motherhood, disability, and discovery. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, talk about that academic background a little. Why did you decide to study on freak shows as an area of study?
You know, it was just something that interested me. And I think as I got into the work, I realized for various reasons, I had always felt like something of an outsider myself. And so it spoke to something in me. And I also loved it because it was a way of connecting with other people. I felt like everyone I met had some experience of either going to a freak show or some encounter in their past that that made this topic come to life for them.
And freak shows are kind of a freaky idea when you think of it. You're setting humans out as really different and setting them aside and looking at them in a really odd and maybe almost inhuman way.
Exactly. It is all about exploiting the differences of other people for profit and the pleasure of the people who come to see them. And there are some very, very sad stories about the people who performed as freaks. There are also some really fascinating success stories. There were some people whose bodies were so different, there really were no other options for them, and they became sort of free agents and were able to make money and travel the world by exhibiting themselves.
Well, and then you had your second son, Henry, and he was born with Down syndrome. And one of the things you noticed from your academic research, it seems you got a sense, probably a real sense, that people were looking at you and at him differently as somehow outside the norm. What did that feel like?
Well, I have to say first that talking about my previous academic background, that in some ways it prepared me to have this child because I knew a lot about the history and the culture of people with disabilities. And in other ways, it did not prepare me at all because having studied something as an intellectual problem is nothing like confronting it within your own family. And the funny thing about disability is that it happens to all of us if we live long enough. But it seems to always take us by surprise. But I did notice once I had Henry, I had always studied the freak show as something that belonged to the past. And when it was in the present, it happened in these very contained and planned places, like you go to Coney Island and you see a freak show. But I started to find resonances of the freak show dynamic in many of the interactions I had once I had given birth to this child.
So when you're out in public with Henry, what is the perception of people? What kind of reactions did you get that made you really start thinking about this?
You know, having said that, I should say that in general, Henry has been welcomed into the worlds that we inhabit. He is almost always greeted with you know, appreciation and joy and treated like any other child. I would say the main place where I really felt the dynamics of the freak show were in medical encounters. So dealing with certain kinds of doctors, especially specialists who might know a lot about the medical challenges of a person with Down syndrome, but seem not to have given any thoughts to the social dynamics and to recognize that they're dealing with a child and a family that surrounds that child.
Let's follow that thread. What are a couple examples of this in action?
Well, there was one geneticist in particular who I first met maybe a day after Henry was born. I was sitting with him in the NICU. They took him to the neonatal intensive care, even though no one was really sure whether there was anything wrong with him, but they wanted to monitor him. So I was sitting there with him, and this geneticist came along on rounds with a group of residents, and he walked right up to my child. No one acknowledged me, and he had them all cluster around in a circle, and he started to point to different parts of my son's body, and he lifted up his arm and let it fall onto the blankets to show that he had low muscle tone, and kind of gesture to these different features as the revealing signs of Down syndrome. And at that moment, I really felt like I couldn't believe we were in the 21st century. It felt like these scenes I had read about in the 19th century, where you would put people on display and you would look at them as objects and you would sort of review different parts of their body as if they didn't belong to a person.
How did it feel as a mom in that room with your child as a kind of living case study?
It felt shocking, and we had subsequent dealings with this geneticist, and I always felt sort of stunned by his lack of empathy and his failure to recognize us as people. But I also felt, in retrospect, sort of disappointed in myself because I never had the self-possession to speak up. I was just so stunned and sort of intimidated. There I was in my pajamas. You know, I had just given birth a day before. And so I think there's often a lack of awareness also about the power dynamic between a doctor who's there as a very highly educated and respected professional and the position that the parent and the patient is in that context. So I never spoke up, and so part of the reason I wanted to write this book was to work through my feelings about those experiences and also hopefully to educate doctors.
Were there happier stories in your encounters with doctors or other healthcare professionals?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I would say there's two different kinds. Like, if I had to group the doctors into two different categories, they're the ones who see a lot of patients of all kinds and have really accepted my son as a person and as a child while being well aware of particular issues that need to be tracked and cared for in a person with Down syndrome. So our pediatrician has been just outstanding, very empathetic, very wise and sensible. We have a very nice eye doctor, a wonderful dentist. So it's the people who are doing this sort of routine on the ground care. I think what I have learned from geneticists and other specialists who are more willing to talk about these things, one of the problems that tends to arise is that their knowledge about Down syndrome comes from working in hospitals where they often see the most gravely ill patients. So you're not just a person with Down syndrome, which is not an illness or a disease, but you also have some complication. And so they have very little understanding of what it means to be a healthy person with a disability and how to recognize that person as a child and as a whole person and not just as a body part, you know, a kidney or an esophagus, but as a whole person who is part of a family and a social world.
Before we leave the topic of the medical profession, do you have advice for parents of a child with Down syndrome or maybe a disability of some other sort, an illness of some other sort of how to advocate and how to deal with that healthcare system if they encounter, you know, their kid being treated as a symptom?
Well, as I said, I think, first of all, you have to be understanding of yourself and your own limitations. So I'm very clear in the book that I was not very good at speaking back in those moments when I was taken off guard. But you do have to educate yourself. There are many different ways to learn about the best practices in care of children and older and adults with Down syndrome. And so you cannot count on your doctors to know what those are. And so you need to go into the doctor more educated than you might need to be if you had a typical child. And so knowing what to ask for to make sure your child is being screened for various conditions that can arise, and then also to know when your child is not, in fact, being treated but is being observed. So there have been doctors that we simply we stopped seeing them because I felt that they were curious about Henry, and they wanted to study him, but I realized over time that they were not actually giving him any treatment that he wasn't receiving somewhere else. And so you can go overboard with the medicalization. We do want the best care for our children, but many of them are quite healthy, and you don't need to see every specialist under the sun. You just need to be educated about what's best for your child and to remember always that you do know best because you are the parent and you know the child better than anyone else.
We're talking to Rachel Adams. She's the author of Raising Henry, a memoir of motherhood, disability, and discovery, talking about raising her child who was born with Down syndrome. You can join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234 if you have a story, if you're a parent of a child with Down syndrome or a child with a disability. What challenges do you face? What reaction do you get from people in the public? Is there a stupid question you don't want to hear anymore? 800-642-1234 or send an email, talk@WPR.org. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. We're talking to Rachel Adams, writer, professor of English at Columbia University, and the author of Raising Henry, a memoir of motherhood, disability, and discovery. Henry is her second son. He was born with Down syndrome, and we're talking about, a lot of things related to that. And Rachel, just before the break, I mentioned stupid questions. Maybe you don't call them stupid questions, I don't know, but there are questions you've heard a lot that bug you over time. Talk about that a little.
Oh, I was hoping you would ask me that question.
I'm asking you, yep.
Yes.
I didn't want to ask you the stupid questions themselves, though.
Right, of course. I think my least favorite is, didn't you get tested? Mm-hmm. So people always want to know how this happened. And I used to be so surprised by it that I would answer them. And I've decided I should say that there's a whole chapter in the book where I discuss my decisions at length, but I've decided I'm not going to answer that question anymore because it's rude. You don't ask the mothers of other children whether they had prenatal testing or what tests they had, and it seems to imply that something's gone wrong, and that if you had the proper tests or if they had worked in the right way, then someone like me would never have a child like Henry.
Well, there's an assumption there maybe that you would be happier without Henry than with him.
Sure. And what kind of choice? How did this? I think people want to feel like they have control over every aspect of reproduction and parenting. And to me, one of the wonderful lessons of parenthood is just how little control we have over the children that we bring into the world, whether they're disabled or not. We don't get to choose them, and they are their own people from the moment that they come into the world.
That's definitely something I think any parent can relate to, definitely. Well, talk about, I've seen you talk elsewhere about sort of changing our notion of the goals and value of parenthood. I think a lot of people, the assumption, spoken or unspoken, is that successful parenting means you have an independent adult starting at age 18 to 25, somewhere in there. Talk about that a little.
Oh, sure. I also think that a lot of people go into parenting believing that their children will be a reflection of their own brilliance and their talents, And, you know, most of us discover that that's not true. No matter how smart and talented our children are, they're very rarely mirrors of ourselves. And so, I mean, I think any child teaches us to think differently about what it means to be a parent and why we love our children, which may be for very different reasons than an outsider might suspect. But it is true that while we very much hope and expect Henry to be as independent as possible, we can't count on the same kinds of independence that we do with our older son. And so that has caused me to think differently about the life course of my experience as a parent, that I may end up being a caregiver for Henry for longer than usual, and it may be for my entire lifetime. And I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. In fact, it's made me more aware of the ways we're all dependent on other people, and also just all the unpredictable things that can happen to us in life. So I do count on my older son growing up and becoming independent and perhaps moving away, but you just never know what's going to happen. And I think with any child, you can make yourself crazy worrying about a future that is so far down the road that you can't see to it yet.
Well, talking about connections with other people, one of your first thoughts was, I gather, a sense of feeling alone, like you were in this unique position. What happened when you started looking for people to connect to and share this experience?
I felt completely alone. My son was born on December 24th, and so we had the absolute C team in the hospital. And so I think the social worker who worked with us was very new to her job, and she didn't seem to have any advice for me about how I could find other parents or who I could connect with. And so I did feel terribly alone, and I was very worried about the kinds of people that I might be forced into company with in having this child. And so it was a longer process than it might be. I have actually been working with other parents to improve the connections we make with new parents so that they leave the hospital feeling like they have a community. But it took a while, but I called our local chapter of the National Down Syndrome Society, and I met a couple of parents who had volunteered to be contacts. We got our son evaluated for various kinds of therapy, and the therapist put us in touch with other families that we knew. And so slowly I started to build a world, and quite remarkably, I discovered there were two other boys with Down syndrome on our street.
No kidding.
Living in the next block. And I realized I had never seen them before, although I had seen them repeatedly. And it just drove home this point that there are certain things you just don't really notice until they're important to you.
We've just got a couple minutes left. How old is Henry?
So Henry's 5 and a half. He'll be 6 on Christmas.
And I want to get a feeling, what is he into? What kind of things does he like? What does he do?
What is he into? His favorite thing in the world is the Muppets.
Ah.
He will watch the Muppets all day long. I think a lot of the Muppets has quite an adult sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
So some of that is lost on him, but he loves there's the chaos Muppets. He loves the destruction and the zaniness, and he loves the relationship between Miss Piggy and Kermit. And he is a big puppeteer himself. So he'll put a puppet on each hand and he'll walk around and have them talk to each other. And so he's very popular. Often when we ride the subway, we get a whole crowd of other children gathered around him who are really fascinated by this. His other favorite thing is his big brother. So whatever his big brother is into, he wants to be doing that too.
And I think I saw something about Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker.
Oh, well, that's an old. His brother has a new passion every month or so. So now it's baseball season. We're doing fall ball. So there's a lot of baseball playing and talk about the Yankees that goes on in our households.
All right. Well, Rachel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
That was Rachel Adams. She's a writer. She's a professor of English and American Studies at Columbia University. She's the author of Raising Henry, a memoir of motherhood, disability, and discovery.